In today's show, we have Scott Hand, owner and chief of organization at Urban Artifact. Today, we're going to talk about brewing unique beers in Cincinnati.
If you're ready to learn how technology is driving business innovation in Cincinnati and beyond, you're tuned in to the right podcast. Join us for interviews and discussions with business leaders, innovators, and visionaries. With our host, Sam Schutze, CEO of Unstoppable Software. This is Unstoppable Talk.
Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sam. I'm happy to be a guest.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Scott, maybe a place to start is tell us a little bit about the details and facts of Urban Artifact as a brewery.
Oh, we have been around for 5 years now. We opened our doors in April of 2015, growing slowly and steadily that entire time. We have a facility in Northside, which is a neighborhood in Cincinnati. It is a historic church building, which is part of the whole branding and concept for what we did at the beginning. And that's our home base. That is our Urban Artifact. We're pretty proud of the fact that we've occupied and stabilized and restored this fantastic old church building. Our specialty is fruit beers and sour beers. So we can dive into that more as the conversation continues. But that's where we've been in the last couple of years, is really honing on that specialty and expanding that in as many possible ways as we can.
Cool. And so you have a background as an architect, I think. So how did that sort of influence where you located the brewery and kind of lead you to creating it in that location?
It's a really roundabout story. So I am an architect. I'm a licensed architect in Illinois and in Ohio. My specialty is in performing arts and architectural acoustics. So as I had been starting down that career path of practicing architecture and loving music and theater and performing arts, we moved my family back home to Cincinnati, partly to start this kind of venture of the combination music venue and brewery. So that's a business plan that was in the works for several years before this happened, and wanting just to get my hands on doing that for myself, essentially, instead of being an architect for somebody else designing a performing arts facility. I wanted to do it with my own end goals in mind. And so that's a key piece of Urban Artifact, is the fact that we've got a music venue and performance space built into our home. The beer is where the heart is, but the music is where the beer is where our mind is, and the music is where our heart is, might be the better phrase. But doing those both together hand in hand is, from the beginning, has been the key piece of the intentions. And so that's... And it's one of the reasons how I ended up in there, is being able to be the architect for this facility. The manufacturing and beer brewing is something I enjoy and have mindfulness of, but that's not my expertise. My business partners are the ones who are really into the beer and how it gets made and the recipe construction and everything. To me, it's more about the atmosphere, the experience, and being able to combine the enjoyment of drinking great beer and enjoying a great show.
Let's take a quick break. This podcast is sponsored by Unstoppable Software, a Cincinnati-based technology consulting firm. At Unstoppable Software, we bolt on to your company's team and accelerate their ability to deliver custom software development projects. With our deep experience in manufacturing, engineering, and healthcare, we can tailor systems for process improvement, data analytics, machine learning, and document workflow, so they become a user-friendly, perfect fit for your employees and the way they want to work. To learn more about how we make our clients unstoppable, visit us at unstoppablesoftware.com or call us at 513-382-8499. And now, back to Unstoppable Talk.
I've been down in where your tap room is, down in the basement of the church there, whatever, I guess the, whatever that area was called mm-hmm. when it was a church. So I guess what kind of, as an architect, what kind of a work did you have to do to that facility? I mean, obviously, you know, the brewers brought in tanks and pipes and all that sort of stuff, mm-hmm. right? But what did you have to do that, you know, you had to work on?
There? So for folks who haven't been before, we're in the, like I said, mentioned that it's the historic St. Patrick's Church building built in 1873. So we use the undercroft of the church building for the tap room and the music lounge. We actually left the sanctuary space empty. We use it for renting out for large events. We can either host our own big music events or host it out for weddings and receptions and stuff like that. The brewery itself, where we brew the beer, is in the gymnasium building, which is behind the church. So it was obviously a big empty gym. The previous owner was a cookie bakery, so that was an easy conversion. We did have to do a little bit of adjustments, put in some overhead doors and new concrete floors, but it was ready for brewing much easier than trying to put it into the church building, which is, we had a very brief conversation, but it was not worth the effort. Plus, then we got to keep the big open space to use for events.
Yeah.
So the lower level of the church then became the primary spot to put all the action. It's accessible already, which was the main, one of the reasons we didn't make the tap room on the upstairs level is because it's an inaccessible space. We would have had to find a place to put an elevator and ramps. The downstairs space just felt a lot more comfortable. It's the right kind of proportions for having a group of people enjoying themselves rather than in the 35 foot high ceiling space of the upstairs. And then we could also tie the music in a lot easier too, because the acoustics of the upstairs are fantastic for a church choir, but they're really not very good for any other type of music because it's got an 11 second reverberation time. So we took that lower level of the space. We turned the south half into the tap room with the bar and seating and everything. And then the north half of that became the music lounge. So we built a stage, tuned the acoustics, spend a lot of effort making sure that that is essentially the best sounding space in Cincinnati for this size venue. And that's still a piece of what we're doing. And despite the coronavirus issues of music being shut down, but that's, now we've got a future think about what that space is used for. But the original interjection from an architectural standpoint is finding a way that we could get all of these uses into what was essentially an empty space before.
Yeah, it was interesting. I had talked some with folks at Madtree once about when they were doing their project, and they said, you know, whatever you do, don't ever try to turn an aircraft hangar into a brewery. So that's interesting what you said about the gymnasium, how that was sort of plug and play for you guys at least, which certainly is nice.
Mm-hmm.
What about your partners that in the business? How did you meet, and what led to you deciding to create a business together?
Well, one of the roundabout pieces of the storyline is that the original intention and location that we were scouting for this venture was the historic Jackson Brewery building in north over the Rhine. It's actually just a block and a half from where Rheingeist is now. And I don't think fatally, but quite disastrously was caught fire this winter. Yeah. But so I was actually working on that building, planning and development for over a year, came into some troubles with finding the right resolution between the owner and our financing lenders, and had to walk away from that spot. And at that exact day that we had to walk away, the church building that we're in now got listed on the market. So it was essentially meant to be that we found that every issue and problem that we had with that other facility, this one perfectly solved. So it's exactly what we needed and wanted in the neighborhood that we really wanted to be in. And so that's how we got to that location. Also, at the beginning, I was working with a different partner who was going to be the brewing end of our partnership. And he walked away at that same time too. So I had to scramble to find the partners to fill in my experience gap, which was not in the brewing end of things. And I essentially just started calling back through all of the people I had talked with over the previous 2 years, kind of scouting the business plan around, and landed on Brett and Scotty, who are my partners now, who just absolutely loved what I was about to do. If I hadn't partnered with them, they would end up being my competition probably in the next year anyway. So we complemented our experiences perfectly and decided to jump in together. Brett was actually hiking the Appalachian Trail with his wife at the time. So they canceled their hike, flew back, and we closed a loan like a week later.
Wow. Awesome. So how did you, and you mentioned earlier that your all specialty is fruit beers. Mm-hmm. How did you decide on that? What path led to that?
It was a combination of what Brett is really good at, what he likes, and what we all, you know, the group of us liked together at the beginning. And it feels like that happens a lot with other breweries is we think, oh, we're going to need to do one of everything. We need to do an Irish stout. We need to do an IPA. We need to do this. And small brew pubs in specific like neighborhoods do kind of need to have that palette. But if for what we were going after, which is kind of that regional brewery scale, we tried that at the beginning and it just didn't work. It didn't stick because people would come to the tap room for that, but that's not what was selling in other locations. We couldn't move that type of mixed palette of stuff through retail or through draft in other places. So we doubled down on the things that we really enjoyed making up at the beginning and that people in the tap room were saying were our best beers on tap, which just happened to be the fruited sours. So one of the very first beers in that style that we did is now our flagship, the Gadget, which is a raspberry, blackberry, Midwest fruit tart. That combination is essentially was told to us by our bartenders. They said, this is what everybody's been asking for. Can you make it and make it as sour as you can? And now that's nowhere near the most sour thing that we make, but it was at the time. And so that's the Gadget is the kind of like the initial impetus for that style and spark for the style of beer that we are really well known for now.
Yeah, because there's all kinds of variations that are, you know, not a similar recipe to Gadget, I guess, but similar kind of idea, right? And, you know, Astrolabe and I've seen some others out there that are various other fruit beers like that. And they're all, and I think it's interesting because they're all actually kind of brewed out, right? So they're just a liquid, like they're not like a slushy, like you see some of those slushy beers that are like super smoothies and whatever.
Yes.
So I guess you all sort of filter all that fruit material or fiber out of it, right?
Yes. And that's a big key piece of the difference between, it's like if you go on Untappd, the top 50 fruit beers in the country, most of them are going to be these slushy type fruit beers. Mm-hmm. What they do is they put the fruit in after the beer's been fermented. Mm-hmm. So it's sweet. It's actually got real fruit pulp or puree mixed in with the beer. But it started off as an already alcoholic beer, and then they essentially water it down with sweet fruit puree. We use it more like a wine, where we put the fruit into the beer before fermentation and then ferment all of the sugars out, which is why most of those Midwest fruit tarts are in the 8, 9, 10% alcohol range, but they're also dry. So that's part of why the tartness actually works, is because the sourness of the beer balances the fruit flavor, actually can hide a 9% alcohol content. And it doesn't come off as being sweet. It comes off more like a wine drink would be.
Yeah. No, I think it's pretty interesting chemistry. And you mentioned, you know, wine drinks. And, you know, my wife's favorite beer is the pickle beer, I think I was telling you before, which is certainly not exactly fruit, right? But it's a unique creation, though.
We could dive into the details and semantics of fruit versus vegetable versus...
Right. True.
But yes.
Cucumbers are a fruit, probably, technically, right?
I'll side for with whatever you want.
And then, but you do actually also have some beers you've made that are based on some actual wine, I believe. And then I saw someone else was saying out there that their favorite beer is the Bloody Mary beer you've made. Mm-hmm. So you've gotten into some really kind of experimental, interesting combinations that I think I feel like they're probably likely the only one in the U.S. or at least very few in the U.S. Breweries making something like that. Do you think that's the case?
I can't say that we're the only, but we definitely are the ones pushing the limits on some of that stuff. We do have, there's two separate, so you just mentioned two different of our kind of like lines of beers. One is the, what we call the Brut fruit tart, which is essentially the same as the Midwest fruit tarts, except it's very specialized. We've brewed it in conjunction with one of our brewers who's actually got his wine certification. So he's a Cicerone, or is that the wine one? Oh, I'm forgetting. But anyway, they're just single varietal grapes. So we've got one that's, you know, a Cabernet Sauvignon, and we've got a Merlot, and it's just those style of grapes. And you can actually taste like the nuance between the grapes, just like you would with a wine, except they're carbonated and they're actually a beer base. But it's still heavy, heavy on that fruit flavor. The other piece that you mentioned is kind of, we've moved into an Epicurean line. So they're essentially food-based or food-influenced-based beers. Mm-hmm. The Bloody Mary is one. We just did, there's a whole variety of the pickle ones that are coming out next month. So we've got a spicy pickle and a bread and butter pickle.
Oh, wow.
Historically, we've also done ones that are like mushroom based and things like that that come up.
I think I had the rye and salt one.
Oh, yes.
Epicurean.
Yeah. So that's another of the Epicurean line where it's meant to be either drank with food or be based off of a food recipe.
So are you doing food pairing tastings, that sort of stuff at the brewery as well, where people come in and try it with some recommended food? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, we did a little bit of that when we started off with the Epicurean lines, and we have a festival which is at Thanksgiving. It's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving every year. That is it's our Epicurean festival.
Okay.
What did we brand it? We called it Bon Vivant. So it's got all of the Epicurean beers, and it's paired with local vendors, food vendors who have made recipes specific to match up and pair with those. And hopefully we'll be expanding that sort of thing once the tap room starts opening back up too.
Yeah. No. Well, it's definitely interesting that you're used basically your customers' requests to kind of refine your product, right? Because I think that's better than trying to figure it out without any input.
Mm-hmm.
It is really interesting to me how, you know, from a business case, sort of like how all these breweries need to find their own niche or their own specialty in order to stand out, right? Either it's for one particular beer, maybe that they're really strong at, or, you know, how fun their tap room is or something like that. Or, you know, they all have some special niche, you know. So I think you guys have done a really good job with the sort of experimental exploratory beers. And I had some of the, there was the Missing Link beer too, which had a really amazing story to it around how you started that.
Yeah. I totally agree with what you say. And that's usually my number one business advice I tell to other people who are getting into the brewing business is find out what your niche is and make sure that you relate back to it with everything you do. That's one of the things that took a while for us to figure out that's important, but it's the key piece of every decision we make. We have to say, is this actually what we are? Does it help with getting into that niche better? Or is it just some deviation and distraction? Because that doesn't help. But the Missing Link beer, the beer by itself is not particularly interesting. It doesn't have a whole lot of flavor. But it's totally the story behind it that sells that one. Brett and some of the team from the brewing staff went down into a historic lagering tunnel that they just opened up, like as they were unearthing the entry to it, like moving the stones. They actually like went in Indiana Jones style. Took swabs out of the 150-year-old brewing vessels that were down in those cellaring tunnels, and then sent them off to a lab to see what they found. And it turned out that what they found was actually regular brewing yeast still alive, growing on there. So they cultured it up, and we pitched it into a batch of beer with a base that we thought was going to be similar to what they would have brewed historically 150 years ago to try to recreate what that beer would taste like.
Yeah, it's pretty wild just to think about, you know, like what they saw or what they experienced as beer that long ago wasn't exactly what we experienced as beer. Like their tastes were different, you know. They certainly didn't drink the variety, I suppose, of beers, because I mean, I think there's a lot of beers you really can't do without adequate refrigeration and stuff, right?
Right.
And just more advanced processes. So it's kind of funny how, I don't know, it was a throwback for sure. So it's interesting. Do you all distribute yourself, or do you go through one of the major distributors?
We do not self-distribute. We actually retail distribute to 10 different states. So and beer distribution is kind of a crazy animal of its own. So each state or portion of some states all have their own distributor. So we've got, and one of my business partners, Scotty, he manages all of those relationships and helps us been, you know, we've been expanding slowly across the Midwest, essentially, and Florida. We're in Florida.
Huh. That's interesting.
So, yeah, we started in Ohio. We kind of got to where we thought was a good point in Ohio and then started spreading out past that. And one of the big switches that just happened, partly because of the coronavirus shutdown, is we branched out into direct ship distribution. So that part we do ourselves. We pack and ship just straight from the brewery.
Website.
Yeah. So we've got an online order system. We pack and ship. UPS actually does the delivering, but we're in 11 states for that footprint. Surprisingly, the only overlap between them is Ohio. So we don't direct ship to any of the other states that we retail ship to. And that's totally a legal issue, not a business decision at the moment.
Has the demand, I imagine that's been a very popular service, you know, shipping directly to customers. Is that just like have you had to grow staff to handle that, or just, I don't know, bring in all kind of new methods to handle that kind of shipment?
Well, it was partly a mother of invention sort of thing. So we knew we were eventually going to be doing that. That was been in the works, but then, you know, March 20th or whatever, when we realized we weren't going to be able to have the tap room open, we pulled the trigger and said we need to do this as soon as possible. So 6 days later, we launched that website with all of the stuff that we had in package at the time. The law had allowed us to open up and direct ship to within Ohio, since the brewery is in Ohio. As a manufacturer, we're allowed to do that. So that was what we did first, and then immediately sent out applications to all of the other states that allowed us to direct ship from Ohio to their state.
Gotcha.
And sorry to cut you off, but it's been crazy. Like, that's been what sustained us through this shutdown so far. And the demand for it has just grown over the last 8 weeks. It's been crazy.
Yeah. It's interesting how it's almost like it introduces a whole new channel that maybe wouldn't have necessarily caught on in popularity. Who knows? I mean, maybe it would have, maybe it wouldn't have.
Yeah.
But now that people are used to it, maybe they're going to keep doing it, you know, just forever. Right. I mean, sometimes that's what it takes, is people to get used to some new way of buying or doing things, you know, before it sticks. So that's very cool. And that's at artifactbeer.com is your website.
Yeah, our website's artifactbeer.com. The online ordering website is artifactmerch.com.
That's right. Okay. I thought it was different. Okay. Just wanted to mention that in case anybody wanted to look at it.
Yes. Please go check us out. We've got all of our beer, all of our merchandise, like shirts and stuff. And I just started putting up some art prints. So
yeah,
art that's been done for the labels and for other branding stuff, which is that's my baby. That's a piece that I'm in charge of, is the aesthetics of the brand. So I've got enough compliments that I decided to get over my innate humbleness and put those up there for people to buy.
Now, that's a good point, actually, because you're right that all of your cans have pretty detailed, unique, like, they're, other than maybe the font on the front of the typical cans, the block lettering, the black letters. I mean, that's kind of the same, but everything else with the cans are different. Particularly, I think some of the Epicurean labels and all that are really distinctive. I mean, how much time does it take to create the artwork for each new can? And that's your baby.
Yep.
How do you come up with the concepts for those?
Well, that's essentially the thing that I'm most happy about in terms of building this business, is that I've been able to find my niche of things that I really enjoy doing. And that stupid caveat of, you know, if you find a job you love, then you're never working a day in your life, which is totally false. You work overtime all the time forever, right? But I love this art. I love doing the artwork. It really is enjoyable to me. Some of those are frustratingly difficult, like that the picture on that vocoder can was really hard to draw. I couldn't get it quite right. But it's also just a simple pen and ink drawing, so it took a couple hours just to...
So you draw them yourself?
I do, and you'd be surprised. Most of that artwork on the Midwest Fruit Tarts is literally a pen on a piece of printer paper that I've taken a picture of with my phone, and then edited a tiny bit in the computer.
Wow.
The ones for the Epicurean ones and the more fancy labeled ones, I've actually started doing real watercolor paintings, and those are the ones that are ending up on the website now to use. It's just been a lot of growth artistically and been able to expand the brand in that direction too.
I'm going to venture to say that you're probably one of the very few brewery owners in the United States that paints or draws their own can art. Like, that's got to be a very small set of people.
I'm sure right? It is.
I mean, maybe I'm neglecting someone else in Cincinnati who does that, but I don't think so. So that's a unique set of talents for sure to bring to the business. Very cool. That's interesting to note. You know, it's like, because I think in any kind of brewery, there's never just one person. Like, you can't, I don't think, I've never seen a brewery that started, well, it's not completely true. Yeah. I have seen some that are started by one person. But typically it's 2, 3, 4 people, mm-hmm. right? And not all of them are going to be master brewers because you don't need that.
Right.
Right. So then what do the other people do?
Right. Yes.
And if you get enough of them, then it's like, well, we got somebody handling distribution, brewing, the tap room. All right. Then there's this guy. So that's awesome that you're able to find, you know, something like you said, since you're not the one with the brewing background, how can you really contribute to the business and making it unique? And I think you said as chief of organization, you manage really kind of all like the true business stuff as well. Is that right?
Yeah. I tend to tell people that my job is just to make sure everyone else can do their job without any mm-hmm. hassles. So I'm not always successful, but the goal is just to like pull out all the things that might be constraining folks from getting the stuff done. If I can make their job easier, that's what I'm trying to get done.
And I think that's the vision that everyone should have in any business anywhere if they're in that role, right? Like, it doesn't matter if you're a software company or a brewery. Like, if you know, like, if I was in there messing around with code all the time, that's wrong. Like, should not be doing that. I should be doing what you just said, making sure that other people can do their job,
right?
You know? And blocking and tackling and stuff.
Yeah, right? It's probably an applicable skill for any position in any business, really.
Yeah, no, very cool. You mentioned, you know, just coronavirus stuff and reopening. Of course, it's all a hot topic everyone's talking about. Mm-hmm. But what are the main things that you as a brewery are looking at when you reopen that you want to prioritize? Or, I mean, obviously there's safety and stuff, but, you know, how are you going to make, what's key to that experience that you want to make happen?
We're still struggling with that, honestly. And I don't have a perfect answer. We're decided we're not opening right when we're going to be allowed to, because we want a little bit of time to explore and see what it looks like in other locations. We realize that people come to our brewery with the expectation of having an experience. We hope it's good. What's our goal is to kind of push it towards being a good experience, having a, you know, enjoying some good music, enjoying some good beer. If we can't do that, then we're not going to be successful. And so we need to kind of mitigate all of that stuff in the meantime. I'm not sure that we're comfortable having people, you know, sitting in little groups of 2, 6 feet apart, you know, scared to walk through the crowd and order. It's not going to be fun for anybody.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that other places won't be successful at managing that in their own spaces. Our church, you know, basement of a church building makes it really difficult because there's so many constraints. We know, you know, it's only so wide. There's doors in these locations. There's not a lot of windows, so it doesn't feel particularly open. So that experience is something that's really important to how we feel the brand gets interpreted by other people. And then mm-hmm. on top of that, we have the music issue too, where we used to have music 5 nights a week and we had to shut that down. I'm not sure we're going to be able to open that up for quite a while, just in terms of safety and security. So what do we do to kind of still keep that heart of the business, keep that space in use, but not make it seem like it's just a total failure in terms of that experience? I don't have an answer for that yet.
Yeah. Do you have outdoor space there that you can have music outdoors and stuff?
We do. And that, thankfully, we've got a fantastic courtyard next to the church building, which is, it gets great sunlight. It's got a huge 115-year-old ginkgo tree that shades it. So we will be using that probably before anything else. We'll open up, we'll build a little stage. It's already in the works. So we'll have music and outdoor seating out there.
Cool. Yeah. And we were talking a little bit before about for some of your most popular beers, you actually have started brewing that with a contract brewer, and you're really kind of specializing your brewery in Northside there to be working on your sort of more smaller batch mm-hmm. beers. I think is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah. So we contract brew through a brewer up in Wisconsin. They take off essentially the capacity for some of the more, in quotes, easier to brew beers. the ones that aren't quite so complicated in terms of the fruit additions or the other levels of that. And that helps free up the tank space in the our Northside facility for to be more adventurous and make some bigger batches of the stuff that people may not have had before, because it is actually selling now. So we've got the both the crowd demand for it and the capacity to handle it.
Yeah. Awesome. Once things get open back up and everything's proceeding as normal, I mean, obviously you guys are, I think you're a very innovative brewery. What do you think is next, you know, during next year or whatever, once things are back to normal, what are some of your future goals for what you want to, where you want to be, where you want to go?
I definitely see that the online store is going to stay. So our mm-hmm. anticipation is that we're going to keep servicing that. It's been fantastic because normally, like the extremely specialized stuff that I was just mentioning that we brew on site was historically only available on site. So now we're able yeah. to ship it to people in Cleveland or to people in Virginia or Oregon or whatever, and they can get a taste of some of the weird stuff that they would never have been able to find on their store shelves. So we're going to keep doing that and hopefully keep growing that end of things. Because of this, been able to disperse the product in a new way, we do see the growth of some of those more adventurous beer styles. So the brute fruit tarts and the Epicurean lines are going to continue to grow in their own way, and we're going to try to hopefully keep that going.
Well, especially because I imagine theoretically with that online store, if you get the right licensing and whatnot, you could sell to 50 states, right? Or
that's part
some number.
Part of what we're that's a legal battle, and we're hoping yeah. that the Craft Brewers Association jumps into that and helps us mitigate the legal landscape. But yeah, there's a whole reciprocity in there. Apparently there was a court issue with wine because wine can ship. And apparently yeah. they won the argument by saying that if you could ship wine out of your state into another one, that they should allow it the other way around. And right now that's not true with beer. So in theory, at some point up the courts will have to take that up.
Yeah, well, hopefully that'll work out for sure. Basically, once you all are open again, where should people look to find information about when you'll be opening and how to find the brewery and such?
Social media is almost always the best. You can find us on Facebook is probably the easiest. We've been trying to keep things up to date on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Usually find us under Artifact Beer, or you can search for Urban Artifact. Again, the online ordering website's artifactmerch.com. But you can find it from artifactbeer.com also.
Great. And I believe the pickle beer is releasing June 22nd.
June 22nd is the big pickle release.
Yeah. So a month from today.
We historically had a big pickle eating contest, and unfortunately that's on hold for this year. But the beer is going to be around, and we've got four packs of mixed pickle varieties coming out with it too.
Yeah. So stay tuned for that and watch social media for when that's opening. And if people have any questions for you, should they reach out to you on LinkedIn or something like that if they want to connect with you?
Yeah, LinkedIn's a great place to connect with me. I'm pretty active on there. You can find me at Scott Hand.
Great. Awesome. Well, Scott, thanks so much for coming on the show and talking to us about the origins of your brewery. You know, I think you guys are doing great work there and really interesting stuff. And I hope to come down and visit as soon as things have returned completely back to normal. And I will be watching for the pickle beer.
Sounds good, Sam. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Unstoppable Talk. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, be sure to support the show by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. And learn more about this show by heading over to unstoppablesoftware.com. Until next time, keep innovating.